If we get to the point where we don't help each other anymore, that's when we stop being human.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that brings you all of the updates on Book Talk's most popular books and tells you whether or not you should take the time out of your busy schedule to read them. I'm Catherine.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Caitlin. And I'm super excited because we are recording this on my 30th birthday. And we are talking about what may be my favorite book of the whole year that I've been begging them to read for months. So...
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday.
Anyway, and promise I did more interesting things than just record a podcast on my 38th birthday, okay? Yeah. not that this isn't interesting, but today we are talking about a lit RPG, which stands for literary role-playing game. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it is the book that has been come on by storm this year, Dungeon Crawler Carl. You've probably seen the fun covers, and if you're an audio person, there's some fun illustrations. And this has started popping up on TikTok a while ago for me, but now I feel like it's just like everywhere. So Carl is outside in the cold trying to get his ex-girlfriend's cat back inside when the world ends. Most of humanity is destroyed suddenly, and the people who were lucky enough, like Carl, to not be in buildings have the option to try and exist on the face of the earth with no shelter or enter the dungeons and play this sort of game to try and make it out. This is, if you've ever played a video game, it's very video game-esque, but narrated, it's hard to explain. But like there are like power-ups and potions and things that the crawlers, Carl, get to use to try and make it through this like death level game that's broadcast intergalactically.
It's D&D inspired.
Yeah. It's Dungeons and Dragons, Baldur's Gate kind of vibes, and add in reality television.
But yeah. Also, there's a talking cat.
Yes. That's going to be your favorite character. I can already predict.
I know how we feel about talking animal sidekicks on this podcast. One of the few things we almost always like.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it did help me choose to read this book a few months ago. So anyway. Oh, I didn't find a review. No.
Caitlin said, and as my birthday present, you all will deliver me the reviews.
Read me reviews. you guys can go while I find one.
Okay.
Sure.
I have a 1-star review. And to be fair, the 1-star reviews are very interesting because it's a lot of like women who are like very anti this book because they felt that the female characters or the portrayals of women or some of the descriptions of women were a little sexist, which I thought was interesting because I don't necessarily agree, but I also can see where they're coming from. But I really liked this 1-star review where it said, I really tried to make it through this one, but gave it up around 80% in. It's written for a very specific audience, mainly guys who like D&D, fighting, and weird sex stuff.
Weird sex stuff?
Oh, come on.
There's a lot of weird sex jokes.
Yeah.
Jokes, yeah.
But that's weird sex stuff.
Okay, well, that's not what I took away from the book.
No. That's fair.
I would say, especially in book one, it's pretty minimal, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
I have 2 reviews. One of them is one of my favorite reviews I've ever found. So I'm really excited.
Ooh.
Both 3 stars. One says, not totally sure why I finished this, but I did. And then started the second one.
Fair.
Pretty relatable. The next one, I love this one so much. And it just says, Shrek and Donkey in another universe.
That is great.
Yes, that's so accurate.
Y'all don't even understand how just on the nose that is.
Oh my God. Yes.
Such a good observation. Shrek mm-hmm. and Donkey in another universe. Mm-hmm.
I did just find a funny one. You'll have to bear with me because it's long, but it's funny. 3 stars. This book tastes like coffee. If you are a coffee person, you'll need this and you'll devour it. The characters and humor are like the finest coffee beans. The roasting is a perfectly action-packed flow and it's poured with scorching hot satire. However, if you're not into coffee, you will not like this. It's very strong. The author really goes all in with the premise and there's a lot of exposition you'll have to swallow. You won't be able to get this taste out of your mouth. I, for one, don't usually drink coffee unless there's a lot of milk and syrup in there. In this case, I enjoyed the coffee mostly because I read it with a friend, the milk, and a book club, the syrup. That way, the coffee, the book, tasted great. Does this mean I'm now a coffee person? No. I'm really glad to see that other people love it, and I had a great time reading this, finishing it in only a few sittings. However, now that it's over, you'll find me back with my tea.
Okay.
That wasn't a really elaborate metaphor. But
yeah, I was about to say, he really took a metaphor to new heights.
I was like, yeah, I have to. That was good. Someone else said it got them out of their Onyx Storm slump.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that
high
is
praise.
Tea.
That is. Okay. Well, this is an incredibly beloved book. As Caitlin said, it has kind of, I would say, it's had a cult following, it seems, of like very loyal readers and a very loyal fan base. But much like with Red Rising, now the girlies are kind of getting their hands on it. And it is having an explosion of popularity now.
It's really picking up around a lot among men, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just anyone kind of outside of, I don't even know what group of people this would have been originally. But
D&D. Sci-fi people.
Readers, whatever. But the ratings are still incredibly high for this book. The overall Goodreads rating is 4.49 out of 5. On Fable, it has 4 out of 5. And then on Storygraph, it has 4.4 out of 5. So that's really high. That means most readers rated it somewhere between a 4 and a 5 star. What did you guys give it?
I feel like we already know Caitlin's because it's her favorite book.
It might be my favorite book of the year. So yeah. I give this 5 stars.
Yeah. I'm probably going to be the lowest on this podcast.
You can't. It's my birthday.
I know. No, you're going to like this. This is not bad. I rounded up to 5 stars, but I'm between a 4.5 and a 5 because there were some moments where I was kind of bored, not going to lie. And there were some moments where it was almost too cheesy for me. And I was like, okay, we can tone down I don't know. It's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah. We'll just go with that.
Yeah. And then I also gave it 5 stars. I devoured it. I told them just as we started recording. So we'll see if y'all want to splice in that reaction, but I am already on book 4 of the series, so.
Oh, my God. No, on Goodreads, I gave it 4 stars.
What?
No, Caitlin.
I'm going to change that.
Yeah. That must have been a mistake, surely.
Sorry. Been a while. I love this book. Go on. Sorry.
No, it's fine. So, yeah, the books are not like a typical series. I feel like one of the reasons I've read so many is that they all pick up immediately with the end of the previous book. So it feels more like watching one long movie than it does reading installments of a series.
She would know because she also said she's read one per day.
Yeah, I have been absolutely devouring them the past probably 3 months now. I feel like I've had almost no desire to read. I've just been in a massive book slump. Nothing has really been making me happy. Everything's been fine. We've read some good books, but I've been in a huge slump and I've been really having to force myself to read. This cured me. Like, I cannot put it down. I'm obsessed with the world. I love the characters. I do have a few gripes with some of the boy humor.
Yeah.
But honestly, that stuff didn't bother me till book 2. So most of it I thought was great. I thought it was super unique. I think I love the level-based system. I think it really keeps the momentum going. And it's really funny without being vapid. Like, there's this whole background context about kind of like intergalactic capitalism and exploitation that gives the book more depth, even though it's kind of a funny, silly book on its face. So
I think there's a lot of death.
A lot of death, a lot of death and gore and like satire. So yeah, I think this book knocked it out of the park.
I am just so smug right now because I've been requesting this book for so long, knowing it's possible Casey could hate it.
Yeah.
But I am just so satisfied. I feel as victorious as I did with Serpent in the Wings of Night. Yeah.
You should.
This is amazing. Also, if anyone who has seen me in person recently in the last like 2 months and brought up, oh, what should I read? You all know I've been talking about this. And like my brother-in-law started them like a week or two ago. He's on book three. I just had a friend tell me today she's on book two and her sister's on book three. So this is ACOTAR all over again. Welcome to my cult.
Okay. I guess that means I have to get started on book two.
I think
I've already read book two.
Marketing people need to stop making these books so clearly male-centered in their advertising. Because if you look at the books, I was like, I would never pick this up.
So they have changed the colors.
They've changed them now. Yeah.
Yes.
So they're mass marketing a lot better. Yeah.
And it's still a boyish book for sure.
Yes. Right. But they like even in Barnes and Noble, they're getting separate tables separate from the like main fantasy section. And they're like more like graphic design, black cover with Princess Donut and Carl on it. But it's not the goblin chasing man in boxers with a weird ass cat anymore.
It was a great way for me to picture Carl.
Yes, it did help. But it's also now a great way to make the advertising more gender neutral, which I think is the right choice.
Yeah. Some girls like video games, too.
Yeah.
Me and Catherine being two of those.
Yep.
I don't play like D&D, but I can appreciate things that are based in the world of games.
I play D&D, so.
Wow. Catherine just outed herself, actually.
I know. I'm such a nerd.
We did not know that about her.
Well, I was a Sims girl, so like I like anything that includes like niche worlds and torture.
Then you would enjoy D&D.
This is a random tangent. We'll get back to the book in a second. I have played D&D a few times and I loved it. I like became obsessed with it. But our dungeon master was my friend's boyfriend at the time and they broke up.
I really am the only one who's never played D&D.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. Huh. Pretty fun. I admit it's fun.
But like, I grew up playing video games. Mostly,
I think you would enjoy it. Kind. If you get a good dungeon master who can cater to the group, it's a lot of fun.
It's one of those games that's as fun as you make it.
Mm-hmm.
I also love a good task-based game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there's lots of customization. Like, I used to, every single animal I ever saw, I'd try to make a pet. And it worked at least half the time. So I had a whole menagerie.
Yeah, you can be a druid that turns into all pets. Probably
Carl, too.
Okay, anyway. Those are our star ratings. So obviously, we, as a collective, really enjoyed this book.
I can't believe I originally gave it 4 stars. I've been telling everybody and their mother about this book.
I know. That really
you need to change that.
I just did.
Yeah.
I need to go change it on the other ones, too.
Yeah.
I never change ratings, ever.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer of if it sticks, it sticks. But
I think this book sits with you more as well. Because, like, when I first finished it, I was like, okay, I'm done.
Well, and I don't know. I've read already into the, like, I'm through. That's one of the questions we're going to do. I'm through the second one. So, like, I love these books. I have the third one ready to go.
Right.
But like you, I've been in a slump. However, my slump came after reading books 1 and 2.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, discussion questions for the non-spoiler section.
Okay, wait. Storygraph had a 5 already.
Okay.
It was an error on Goodreads.
Was an error on Goodreads. We're going to just blame Amazon for that.
As we should.
Okay. Is this book more plot or character driven?
Plot. Yeah.
It's a dungeon.
You don't really have a choice. He's just there.
Right. It's one of the few books I'd say that I've really enjoyed that's actually pretty low on the character development scale. Like a lot of the intrigue comes from the world and the universe that they enter.
Yeah, like he has to survive.
I love a good plot-based book.
Yeah. It's 100% plot. I mean, Carl does have not even character development, just like growth in the sense of like he learns a lot about the world and society. And you can tell he's actually like a really good person throughout the book because he makes a lot of comments of just like, we have to keep our humanity. We can't just like go into these barbaric games and stop treating each other like humans. Right. So he's like a good character for it, but like he is completely at the mercy of the corporation and of the people running the games.
Right. Of the rest of the universe.
Yeah.
He's a speck.
I'd say it's more like he has a chance to step up, and he does. Okay. We've already been discussing this, but have you or would you read other books by the author? I just started book four. I'm hoping I can knock it out.
I have book three ready to go, and I also have tickets to see him here in Kansas City in February with narrator Jeff Hayes moderating to talk about his new book, Operation Bounce House.
Okay. I will read book two because I think it was interesting. I just have to find the time to do so, but I thought it was good.
Okay, here's my plug. I'm not an audiobook girly. You must consume these via audiobook. Jeff Hayes, the narrator, is amazing. And these books were so fun to listen to in the car or while I was crocheting. Like, I was looking for every spare moment I could to listen to this book. And I don't even really like audiobooks.
Okay. Yeah. High praise.
Also, Spotify does have the audiobooks. And all the books are on Kindle Unlimited. So a lot of you book girlies can read them for free.
That's part of the reason I've been slower is because I refused to read them in person after listening to the first one on audiobook. So I had to wait till I had a new Audible credit. But now I have the other one ready to go and I've just been slacking.
Yeah. Okay. So how was the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read?
Oh. This took me longer just because I was listening to audio and my drives aren't very long. But I still blew through it. Like, I was trying to listen to it, like I said, as much as I could. I don't know how long it actually took me. But I blew through both books, one and two.
Right. I also blew through it.
Clearly.
Yeah. I think I started this Wednesday and either finished it late Thursday or early Friday. And then after that, I finished books two and three in a day.
Which is crazy because these are not small books.
No, they're not.
I think the first one is the shortest. The first one is kind of short. I think it's like 350 pages.
400 plus.
Oh, sorry. That was wrong. Maybe it's the second one that's 350 pages. But they definitely, I think since then, have been about 500. So I don't know. For a fantasy reader, that's not too bad, but they're definitely not short books.
Yeah, it took me about 3 days to read, and I read them on two plane rides. So basically, I was in New York City this weekend. I didn't have a lot of free time, so I read it on the plane and then on the way there and on the way back and finished it on the
plane. I listened to this on a plane.
There you go.
It's a wild book to listen to on a plane.
It's a wild book to read on a plane.
But I thoroughly, like, my plane ride to California went so fast.
Yeah, same. My plane ride to New York City went so fast. Yeah. 4 hour plane ride. Didn't even notice.
I enjoyed myself.
Right. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I listened to this when I was going to see Casey.
Yeah. Woohoo. The beginning of the obsession.
I was like, hey.
You said we need to do this on the podcast.
I did.
Okay. And then would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This would be so cool.
Fun fact, though, I think it's been picked up for live action. And people are pissed. So, like, why would you make this live action?
I think that this would be a great movie series. I did hear that it got picked up. I think there's eight total books, or there's seven total books in the series right now.
There'll be more. Yeah.
And then I think that the eighth is coming later this year.
Well, Operation Bounce House is coming next, and it's not related. So, I don't know.
Right. This is all, I just saw one good review that referenced it.
There are some TikTok people who are mad and said, why didn't you just throw a bunch of money at like high quality anime style instead of trying to CGI all of this stuff? Because there's one human in the whole thing. There's
more than one human.
I know, but their point was,
right,
for the most part, you're with a man and a cat.
Yes.
And nothing else human.
And the cat is talking, so.
Right.
I do think it would have made more sense to make it an animated series. However, I will reserve judgment until I see what it looks like.
There were a lot of people who did Halloween costumes. As the best one I saw, the man was like Carl in the boxers, and the girl was had this awesome donut costume, and she was wearing an inflatable dinosaur costume too. I'll leave it right there.
Oh my god.
Casey knows.
Yeah.
It was the best.
Later. All right. So that's pretty quick. I mean, we don't want to spoil anything. It is a sequential series. So there's, I think, 18 total levels to the dungeon, and we just observe them going down each level. So I think book one is levels 1 through 3.
1 through 2.
1 and 2, and then they leave book off, right?
2 is level 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the levels get more challenging, obviously, as they go. So we don't want to spoil anything, because everything is about the levels and figuring out the game and learning how to survive. So that's our spoiler alert section. Oh, wait, we have to do busy girl rating.
That's true. Good point. Actually, I was like, yeah, what's my busy girl rating? And then listened to it. I was like, all right, spoilers. I can't wait to talk about it because I am so excited to talk about it.
Oh, my goodness.
I will give this a busy girl's 4. Only because I know there are some people who will pick this up and be like, huh? I would say it's not for everyone. It's probably for like 75% of people, but not for everyone. But clearly none of us have had any issue reading it. So there's nothing wrong with the pace. It's just, you do have to keep track of quite a lot of story and things that have happened. So that also is not the most busy friendly, but like it's possible.
Yeah. I think a 4 is fair. Yeah, it's not for everyone. It's very, like, it's for the fantasy girlies, I think. I think most fantasy girlies would really enjoy this book because it's world building, and that's what you read fantasy for.
No, there's some girls who read the fantasy only for the, like, romanticy.
Well, that's romanticy. I said fantasy.
Okay, yeah. If you like fantasy.
Yeah.
Or science fantasy, that genre we've been talking about.
Yes. I think science fantasy is an up-and-coming genre. And I really think that if you enjoy world building, you will enjoy this book. But if you do not enjoy world building, you probably won't enjoy this book.
Yeah. This book is full of the world building and political intrigue that normally makes me love a fantasy book. Also, it definitely leans into that fantasy sci-fi realm because it's all technically based in reality and like some sort of explanation mixed with the sort of more magical elements that are created by the game. So I definitely, I'll also give it a 4. I did see some reviews saying that it was like too much to keep track of for them. And they were sort of annoyed by the video game setup of everything. I think
some people would be.
Right. I do think if reading a brand new world is not normally a big part of your reading experience and what makes you love a book, it might not be for you because the intrigue is heavily based in that. And a lot of the conflict is about the world. The world is its own character, and the levels are their own characters. So anyway, I think if you're not used to picking up a new world quickly, it might be a challenge for you. And then I definitely think you also have to enjoy satire because this book takes the very kind of like poke the bear, jokester, like...
This book is full of all the jokes I don't say out loud.
Yeah.
I remember thinking commentary in my head a couple times. I was like, and then it said it. And I was like,
it's lots
please
of-
don't think poorly of me when you read it now.
No, it's fair. There were some moments where I, like, you could tell where the commentary was going about like some of the bosses and stuff that I was thinking it before it happened.
I was like, oh, this is all the stuff I like say to my brother-in-law and no one else.
It's very raunchy humor, like much satire.
He's on book 3.
Yeah. That makes so much sense for him. Like most satire, it's based in extreme ridiculousness and taking stereotypes to their nth degree. So, you know, you got to be ready for that. So I'll give it a 4.
Okay, we agreed all on our ratings and all on our Busy Girl ratings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again. It almost never happens.
Now it's happened twice in a row. Well,
there you have it for the non-spoiler section. We are going to get into a spoiler alert, and please stop here if you have not read this book. There is kind of a lot to spoil because it is a level-based video game, and I think you really want to read and be surprised by some of the things that are about to happen. There are a lot of twists and turns and some interesting characters, and I think it would benefit you if you stop here and then come back and listen to our review.
Everybody read this book.
Yes, Caitlin wants you to read this book.
Join Caitlin's my cult. Birthday, so you can't say no.
You have to read it. Yeah.
Okay.
I want to, actually, now I see this as kind of your last question. I want to start with something that I just want to say right now. Matt Dinneman has said the series obviously will go until Carl and Donut make it to the 18th floor, which is the last floor. But what some people may not remember from the very, very beginning is only one crawler can make it out at the end. Donut gets reclassified as a crawler. Mm-hmm. So you know where this series is going, and I am terrified this man is going to rip my heart out.
Yeah, but also no crawler has ever made it to the 18th floor. They've only made it to 13. Yes.
I'm just saying, I'm reading this series with great anxiety, which heightens my reading experience, honestly.
Yes. So Princess Donut is a crawler, and that's very quickly made a thing because she eats a treat and it makes her a talking cat, which yes. Then, because she is a talking cat and cats are obviously superior to humans, she has better charisma. She's got better, like, intelligence.
She's like a show cat. It's so
funny. Yeah, she's a show cat, which makes her like even more charismatic. Like, I get it. I get the
she's an asshole. It's awesome.
She's a cat. She is an asshole. I know. But it is, yes, that is kind of what's been talked about, is that she will have to either betray Carl or Carl will have to betray her. And they keep mentioning level 9 because she has this tiara on. That means that she cannot leave level 9 until she kills all of the royal family. So I'm very concerned about Princess Donut having to do this, because even Mordecai has told
that
Carl
already
leave.
Gets further complicated in book 2. So
yeah. Oh, okay, great.
The foreshadowing that is placed throughout these books is amazing. There are things to anticipate, which is why it's fun to read.
Yes.
Like, you sort of know what's coming, but you totally don't, which is unique.
Every book leaves more continuous things to expect for later. Like, more things, like, they're on level 3, and then level 3 is connected to level 6. So they keep laying the groundwork for level 6, even though you won't get there.
There's going to be this, like, battle that other people can come into at some point, and etc. Like, it teases all of this, so you're just, like, anticipating it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to state that, because I told someone who had been reading, I was like, I think it was my brother-in-law, I was like, you realize that only one of them can win, right? And he was like, he like totally glossed over that part.
Yeah. So, because they
saying it now, Jeff Dinneman might break our hearts.
Matt Dinneman.
Jeff Hayes, Matt Dinneman. Sorry. They're the same person.
LOL. Okay, well, our first actual question is, what do you think of main character Carl?
I love Carl.
Yeah.
He's like a Coast Guard guy who's been left by this girlfriend in, by the way, I'm still waiting for her to appear, for like a rich dude. And he's left with her show cat, who he's grown to love. And he's like motivated, but also kind. Like, he doesn't want to do things he doesn't have to do, but he does what needs to be done. And he protects this freaking cat that's not even his with his life.
Yep.
And so he's like kind of endearing, even though he's like a gruff, like, military guy.
I guess that's a question. Do you think Bea is still alive?
I'm afraid she will reappear.
I am too.
I
don't know.
I feel like she won't. I mean, like, they do keep
squished. She was in the Caribbean.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I fear, obviously, I've only read two of the books, so I'm
not. Yeah. Princess, I mean, yeah, Princess Donut seems to think that she is still alive, but like.
Princess Donut hopes she's still alive. Princess Donut, see, we can talk about her too. Princess Donut is somehow incredibly optimistic while being one of the most pessimistic creatures in existence. Yeah. She just like hopes for really good things in the future and just expects them to come to her. Mm-hmm. But grumbles about it along the way. So Donut definitely hopes B is alive.
Right.
Even though she doesn't realize she has it much better with Carl.
Yeah. But she keeps mentioning, like, even in the first book, like, when we see B again, I want to be my best.
Yeah. I don't know.
And then Carl even mentions in this book that B was going to get rid of her for a newer model for show cats.
Yeah, and this isn't a spoiler because I don't remember if it's in this book or the next one. But Carl talking was basically going to catnap Donut and not give her
yes,
back.
Yes, that was in this book, yes. Donut said, I saw you.
You know that just from their relationship. But yes. Like, she was his emotional supporter.
Yes, even though Donut was an asshole to him.
Yes. I love Donut.
She's my favorite character, yes.
She's everybody's favorite character.
How could she not be?
Yeah.
I definitely think Donut is what I read for. I think Carl is a good main character in the sense that he's kind of plain, but lovable. And his like defining attribute is that he does not want the competition to take his humanity away from him. Like, he really wants to fight for others. And I think the author made a really good decision in sort of making him a Coast Guard member because it's sort of military-esque and is like a person who has skills without falling into like the trope of one of those hyper-masculine military guys. And he comes up with a lot of really interesting schemes. However, I don't know if I'd say I love Carl. Like, I like him, but I'm definitely not reading for him. Like, I'm reading for the journey.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting part is, like, he is a man and we are women. And we tend to relate more with women-led main characters. So when a book has a male main character, you have to overcome another hurdle in order for us to like it. I think Carl is fine, but I don't read for him for sure. And I think there's moments where I'm like, I don't love it. Buddy. Yeah, I'm like, okay,
I read
buddy.
For Agatha. Just kidding.
Agatha's crazy.
Thank you.
Agatha got some mystery to her.
Yeah. That's true. But yeah, I just feel like, yeah, I think he's a smart choice because he facilitates the plot without ever becoming like too much. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of like a safe home for the other characters. But yep.
He's just like a solid person.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There are definitely moments that are, you know, that this book was written by a man. So, yeah. what do you think of the world? So the start of all of this is that our Earth, as we think of it today, is like smushed. So all the buildings are like leveled flat and it's like sucked into the Earth's core. Cars are flattened, kind of any huge man-made structure is flattened, leaving the things like trees and a few exceptions. But basically, there's no civilization left. Like, any human who's inside a building is dead. Obviously,
the first part where I was like, that matched my unspoken humor because that lady was yelling at him. I was like, oh my God, what if her head got cut off? And it was like, there was her head. I was like, yo. Oh no.
I thought that might happen, yes.
There she is. So yeah, there's not really a civilization anymore to go to.
What do you think about them using it to like recycle all the organic matter and stuff?
Crazy.
And they don't even take that much of it.
Yeah.
No.
That's like crazy. The interesting premise, so unique. I don't know how he came up with that. The smush was gross to think about. But then thinking about the other civilizations, like mining the planet for regular matter and like the organic matter. I don't know.
There's a lot, and it doesn't go into it very much in the first book, only because like Carl doesn't know much and you're following your main character's lead. So he's learning more about the corporations and Borant and like other, the syndicate and other parts of the universe that are like mining Earth. But we don't fully know why it was sped up, because they said that the like the games or like the dungeon was opened like way too early, like 2 years too early, and that the company that is running the games is facing bankruptcy. So there are a lot of things that we don't know about the politics of, because Carl is only on level, by the end of it, level 3. So he is still somewhat in the dark. He knows more now, and he's asking the right questions, and he's asking a lot of questions, which we appreciate as readers, but we don't totally know the situation of the politics of the world. But it's very interesting that, like, basically they smush the world, taking elements of it into the dungeon, and then they're mining it, but we're not really sure what they're mining for, why they're mining. Basically, like, we're not sure about the universe at this point, what's happening.
Yeah. And basically, they've all constructed this based on this, like, corporate loophole where they can notify a planet and the planet has to, like, seize its own rights. But they do this at a time. They do it in, like, Pilgrim era, basically, when, like, Earth, there's no way Earth could have, like, stood up for itself.
Or was it, like, Egyptian or something? I don't know.
Oh, it was, like, Egyptian.
Yeah, it was the pyramids.
The pyramids.
So interesting.
And so it all felt, it really reminded me of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, that part. But anyway, this all cues up that like Earth would missed its opportunity to protest its seizure. And now they're making all the Earthlings who so choose compete with each other in this reality TV show. We also learned that the reality TV show is basically the profitable part. Like the mining the elements, yeah, there's profit that comes from that, but it's really the game itself that's the most lucrative part. A little bit of a nod to Chain Gang All-Stars there.
Yeah.
Anyway, what did you guys think about the sort of video gamifying of everything and the reality TV show element of everything?
I'm telling you, I love it. I have no complaints. It's so unique. It's funny. It totally fits into our like capitalistic world. Like you're always nodding along. Like,
right.
I don't think I have complaints about this book, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, I really liked it. I really liked the reality TV show bit and how like it's definitely like the author has something to say about our addiction to reality TV and watching people become train wrecks, because it really is half of reality TV is just train wrecks. So I do think it's very interesting, that kind of thing. Sometimes the author, it feels like he's hitting us over the head with the point, with the very like straight into the point, like satire. So there are moments where I'm like, okay, I get what message you're trying to send. I get it.
It's still great.
It's still good, but there were moments where I'm like, okay,
I understand. 4.5.
Yes.
Yeah. I personally didn't mind it. I didn't find it to be too much. I did. There's just so many like nods just to so many deep themes in the book. Like I was talking to people about how like any book about oppression, I feel like you can find comparisons to this book, because like I'm also thinking about the Hunger Games, where the contestants had to appeal to Capitol residents, even though the Capitol was forcing them to compete in this horrible game. They needed to win the Capitol's sympathy in order to survive the Hunger Games because they needed sponsorships. And this is similar. Like just because you know you're being exploited and oppressed doesn't mean you can escape your exploitation and oppression. Like they still have to play the game, even if they're aware that the game and Borant is benefiting from their popularity and is benefiting from their struggle. They still have to struggle and do the game to survive. So yeah, I thought it was really great. I feel like it's exactly what would happen. It just is so real in a way that's sort of sickening. Like, oh, of course, this is what interplanetary conquering would look like. on all these like fake treaties about the rights of the quote unquote native species. And it was just, I don't know. It's very well done, I think.
Well, and that's like, I don't know. I don't super love like alien books that kind of like, or alien movies that sort of freak me out. But like, I don't think there's a premise like this anywhere else. Like, it's a very unique species conquering species story.
If it's out there, I haven't read it. So
yeah, it's very unique, but it does remind me a bit of like a Cards Against Humanity say, card.
I did get this whole book is Cards Against Humanity. I did get some recs on Audible for some other lit RPGs, but it looks like some of the popular ones are more set in like medieval, like really kind of D&D settings.
Interesting. Yeah, I really liked the video game aspect of this one too, because I feel like I actually love. Like, I think part of the reason I've become so addicted to this series is, like, the achievements and the loot that they get.
New achievement!
Yeah.
That's how the audiobook does it. It's just, like, certain way it's said, and I love it.
That's so funny. But yeah, it's so fascinating to read what they get and how it helps them and the drawbacks. It's just so funny. And
or, like, how the AI is manipulating certain things.
Yeah.
Or the AI has a foot fetish. Yeah.
A foot fetish.
Foot fetish. Oh, my God.
Dude, the foot fetish had me actually rolling.
Like, I was laughing so hard because, like, Carl is just, he's out here, like, complaining about, like, what? I don't have any shoes, I don't have any pants. And then Mordecai has to tell him, stop fucking complaining because the AI likes you when you're complaining. So they're going to torture you more. And I'm like, that's so funny.
Well, and how he gets popular for just randomly yelling, God damn it, donut.
That's his catchphrase.
God's catchphrase. God damn it, donut.
God damn it, donut. Just because donut's out here doing the most.
I love it.
All the time.
Yeah. But like working in the AI and stuff is really interesting. The AI is also sort of autonomous from the corporation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so then they have to be very careful.
Exactly. So yeah, I thought it was very well done and very interesting the way it was done.
I loved all the bugs. Like they would do the updates at the end of the daily recaps. Yes. Like, we fixed these bugs. Sorry about the toilet sucking you into another dimension. I was just like, oh my God.
Or the like people peeing in the hallways.
Yeah. Patch updates. Yeah.
Because it's also true. Like, this is a corporation running it and a corporation that is afraid that they're going to be bankrupt at that. And they don't care about the lives of the crawlers. So, of course, in this rushed version of the game, there's going to be all these problems that like fuck people over.
Yeah. You mentioned Mordecai. Can we talk about Mordecai?
Oh, yes. Okay. I'm sorry. Mordecai is my favorite character. I love Mordecai.
I know. There's some backstory I still haven't heard from him yet. And I don't know when we get it, but something is up.
Yes. Yeah. He's hiding some things.
And I can't say too much because I've read book two, but there's still more I need to know.
Yeah. You also find out later that not all the organizers, like the people who crawlers talk to,
the guild masters,
not all the guild masters are as helpful as Mordecai. But Mordecai obviously develops a lot more as the books go on, so I don't want to spoil anything either.
Well, you kind of like get these hints that he may be like one of the farthest crawlers, like farthest. All these people are former crawlers, and he made it potentially farther than anybody else ever has.
Yes, because he made it.
And Carl and Donut got lucky enough to get Mordecai.
Yes.
Right. Also, like, former crawlers are indentured servants to the dungeons now.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they didn't make it to level 18, so you have to make a deal.
Right, but no one ever has, so it's like,
exactly.
Wow.
So it's a scheme. It's a
pure. The implications are crazy.
Right. Because I think you do find out in book one that the farthest a crawler has ever made it is level 13.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's 18 levels, so obviously that's a pretty big disparity.
And Mordecai made it to 12 or 13?
I think he made it to 12. So he made it to 12, and they made it to the doors of 13 and took a deal because he knew he wasn't going to make it.
Well, and then you got this Odette lady who also maybe made it that far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But she had no legs.
Yeah.
Okay, Odette, wild.
Her costume is one of the things that bothered me.
It's the weird massive boobs. Yeah.
The weird boob humor. Like, just stop.
I was like, huh. But I kind of just brushed it off as boy humor. And like, honestly, we used to work in TV. Like, people like looking at pretty people. So I was like, honestly, commentary on beauty standards on television, wearing this fake outfit to get likes or whatever.
Yeah. Well, part of the reason she wears it is because that's what she wore in the dungeon. Like, the AI gave her that to be funny, basically, and then she had to wear it.
Right, but it made her popular.
Right.
And it continues to be popular.
Right. But I still was like, we didn't have to do that.
Yeah. There's a lot of boob and dick humor in this book.
Yeah. It can be, that can be a little much at points. Jeez. I agree.
Sometimes my internal monologue can be juvenile, so none of it bothered me. No, sometimes you just gotta laugh at the poop joke or whatever.
All right.
Gotta laugh at the old man peeing on the wall and then the repercussions.
Oh, I wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
That aggravated me so well, deep.
He dead, so it's fine.
Yeah. He got what was coming for sure. But it was still was
but
like
it was so course. Funny.
It would be some disgusting, creepy-ass, rude-ass old man who would fuck over the whole group because he can't keep it in his pants. I was mad for them. Like,
Yes. I knew that was coming, only because they talked about, we got to stop Jack from peeing on the walls. And I'm like, he's not going to stop.
Yeah. You're just anticipating it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, however he writes it, is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah. It was crazy.
I want to crawl in this man's brain. I also want to say, how many hours of video games have you played?
A lot, I would guess.
Oh, Lordy.
But also, like, to emphasize again, it doesn't take intense video game knowledge to enjoy this book.
If you grew up in the era of, like, Mario Party, Mario Kart, Nintendo.
If you played Super Mario Brothers, yes, you know mushrooms power you up.
You know power-ups, level-ups, like, bugs. Yeah. You know the lore.
Shortcuts,
you know the lingo.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, Super Mario Bros. Is essentially a dungeon.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyone probably 40 or younger could understand this book just fine.
Yeah.
Just by being a child of the internet.
Right.
Okay. But especially in book one, the crown star, ultimate, funny, lovable relationship is Princess Donut and Carl as a package deal. Their interactions are so funny. They're so cute. I love Princess Donut. This is why I think Carl is a great main character. It's not Carl on his own, but Carl and Donut as a duo work really well together and are very funny and lovable as a team. What did you guys think about their relationship?
It's so sweet and so humorous because, like, Princess Donut is a asshole. She is an asshole.
Yeah.
And when she gets called out on it and Carl threatens to leave, she goes, "Well, no, wait. I need you. I love you." And like, it's that moment of cat, like it's cat humor. And I have cats. So like, I'm of course going to love it because that's literally how cats act is like, as soon as you don't give them attention, they want all the attention. But if you give them too much attention, they swipe at you. Like they're just assholes. And it's so sweet watching Carl like take care of this animal and promise to basically be with Donut and like take care of Donut, and Donut is doing the same. Like it's this very symbiotic relationship where she also is revealing things about his previous life that he didn't realize that like he was being cheated on three times over. And I don't really know who Ferdinand is, but I'm like, okay, who's Ferdinand?
Side note, the reason my friend's sister is on book three already is because she has a cat named Ferdinand and she's just reading to find Ferdinand reference.
She's going to be a little bit disappointed, but yeah, I mean, I think that's well said. They're just, they make up for each other's flaws and they amplify each other's better qualities. I know this author has a cat. Like, there's no way this author doesn't have a cat.
I'm sure he's like a tough man with a cat.
Do you think it's a show cat?
I don't know. I'll let you know after I hear him talk.
Okay. You should ask him that question.
Right.
Whoever in here in Kansas City wants to go with me, let me know. I didn't know about this event until, I don't know, I got an email from one of my favorite bookstores that's hosting it. And I was like, oh no, most of the ones are sold out. And so is the signing line already. And I don't know how, like, people know about this guy. He is trending.
Well, I'm excited. But
don't worry. I still get a book in a balcony seat.
There you go.
I love that for you. Okay. So we've talked about a lot of these already. But one of the things that I found really interesting about book one that got me hooked on the series is They kind of breadcrumb you with interesting details about the Syndicate, which is the company running the game. And you can tell that there's broader geopolitical things happening in the game that could have important implications for the crawlers and are also just very interesting and revealing about the society now outside of the game and in the universe that these humans are going to be thrown into, whether or not they survive or not. Also, you learn things like that from Mordecai, that the crawlers who make it far into the game can cut some deal, basically, so that they survive. I mean, it just opens up a lot of different questions about what could ultimately happen to Carl and Donut. Because Odette was also a former crawler who cuts a deal, and she made it to level 13. So she's one of the crawlers who made it as far as possible. I mean, what did you guys think of this mysterious company? There's this mysterious race that they're affiliated with called the Kwatin, who are also, we kind of slowly learn more and more about them.
I mean, I liked it. I love the corporate greed storyline. I love the views, likes, reality side of it.
Yep.
It is, like, I want to know so much more still about them, and I have so many questions, and I can't wait to see what the author does with this corporation. Yeah. But like, you definitely get the vibe that they are the villain, a villain, but there are other villains lurking somewhere else.
Yes. The Syndicate isn't the biggest fish in this ecosystem.
It's actually the smallest, I think.
Yeah, it's one of the smallest.
And they're actually quite literally fish.
Yeah. LOL. But yeah, I am very excited to see where they go with the Syndicate drama.
Yeah, because there's different companies in the Syndicate. There's different political parties that they mention in the Syndicate. And they have mentioned the bankruptcy. They have mentioned that, like, other people, because, like, the games, like, switches hands every three games or something like that. They explain it in the book.
It's where, like, every year.
Yeah. So every seven games, you get the same company. So it's like, yeah. So it's very interesting to see, like, how each company runs its games. Like they said, one is more like AI, like humanoid droids, while this one is more like goblins and actual living creatures. Yeah, so I think it's just very interesting. I'm excited to learn more about the politics of the universe because we're very, like, stuck in the games unless they allow for, like, pop-outs and for interviews, which I found the interviews very fascinating because you learn a lot about the world because you're outside of the dungeon, you're on the surface of the earth in a boat. Mm-hmm. And especially one of the interviews where it was a prince who was interviewing him, and the prince was a royal dick, like a dude bro podcast bro. And he has made an enemy of that. And that's a prince of a very powerful country within, or galaxy, or we don't really know. Like he's Skull Clan. He's part of the Skull Clan. And that may or may not be a problem when it goes to Skull Floor 9.
Skull Empire.
Sorry.
Empire's way scarier.
That's way scarier. Yes. But we don't know much of anything about the galaxy except for the little nuggets that we get along the way. But there's a lot of people out there, a lot of aliens out there, and a lot of different governments that are fighting over these games.
Yeah. I also really loved that as you go, you kind of learn more and more about even like the goblins and things that they're fighting in the game and how they're also victims. And that storyline also develops a lot as you go and is really interesting about who these creatures are. And most of them are also enslaved. Well,
like the game essentially forces him to commit mass murder and he feels bad about it.
Yeah. Well, then it gives him achievements for committing mass murder to make him feel guilty about it, but also, like, you gave him an achievement for it, so.
Like, right. Baby killer or whatever it was.
Yeah. I guess speaking of that, do you guys want to talk about, like, that ending? Like, there was a final chapter where it's from the perspective of Rory, the goblin, that Princess Donut named, and that they're kind of getting sentience. Like they now are naming themselves and have names. And now the corporation has come in to try and exterminate them, but it seems like they're not going down without a fight. What'd y'all think of that?
It was interesting because their goal is also to get further down in the dungeons.
Right. Like, you learn that the crawlers, the creatures in the upper levels of the dungeon are sort of like cursed and want to be on the lower levels of the dungeon because crawlers never make it there. So if they're on the lower levels of the dungeon, they're also not in danger, basically, which is like they all are tired of fighting the crawlers and actually don't want to fight the crawlers and are afraid of the crawlers, which is really interesting. And so I loved, I don't know, I guess that little Easter egg for later.
Yep.
Because the NPCs that they fight also get more sophisticated as the series goes on.
Even in the next book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems like Rory and the goblins are no longer truly NPCs.
Yeah. It's very interesting. Also kind of a dog whistle to our current AI situation, but
There are so many hidden little commentaries in here when you think about it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, this is scary. Don't let this happen.
Right. I think the only thing we haven't talked about is Frank and Maggie, which is there's humans, obviously, all over the world who have joined the dungeon because there's not much left over on Earth to survive on.
Well, most of the people who join are not American because it was nighttime.
Yeah.
Right. It's the dead of night in
America. Which felt very purposeful.
Crazy to think about. Oh, yeah. The time zone affects your, like, ability to...
But, like, think about it. If it had been daytime in America, the amount of people with guns in the maze, in the dungeon, would have been crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe. All depends if you're outside.
Right. Because also, if you're indoors just working a regular job, you're also dead.
Also sounds like if you're in a car, you're squished, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not a high chance of survival.
Americans are screwed.
And also a lot of livestock. Like, I was thinking through this, and so the smush is actually really smart because it leaves so few options for survival, because it means anything that's already been manufactured is gone pretty much. So you have to create everything from scratch. Mm-hmm. And then most of the livestock that we even have is gone because it's inside structures, like it's inside barns. And so all of that stuff is gone too. So
there is no shelter, and shelter is like base survival.
Right. So anyway, that means that some people who entered the dungeon are not as good as Carl and are a little bit more ruthless. We also kind of learn later. Not
Coast Guard, retired Coast Guard.
Right. They also run into a group of nursing.
This is the best part. The
nursing home residents.
The nursing home had a fire, so they got out, and then the smush happened. So they just, like, were like, whoa, that doorway looks safe. Let's roll all the old people in.
Well, we find out that the fire was set intentionally.
Yeah. By homeless.
Yeah. Agatha's definitely from one of these friggin' something else.
Yeah. Agatha, we think, is from a separate corporation that is competing with said corporation to try and influence the games. Yes. And she specifically set the fire at the nursing home. Which then saved the lives of said residents, but at what cost? Because now the residents are in a dungeon filled with very angry creatures that want to kill you.
Yes. And then we also learn that some of the, I forget what they're called again, the Mordecais of the world.
Guildmasters,
there we go, have also been giving the humans really bad advice and telling them that the only way to live is to kill the other crawlers, which is not true, which leads to a confrontation with two people called Frank and Maggie, who have been killing other crawlers.
They do get level ups from killing other humans.
Right. That's probably one of the darker parts of the book, which is otherwise like lighthearted, other than the obvious, you know, gore and of fighting monsters. But for the most part, the people have not been doing crazy fucked up stuff. They've really just been trying to survive. That was more ruthless than anything else that's in the book. And I like that it was in there just because I feel like it's accurate. Like, unfortunately, there's always going to be bad actors who see hurting other people as like an easy way to the top.
Well, and they killed their own daughter.
Okay, that part was crazy.
That part was wild. They shouldn't have done it. Whatever.
Yeah, their little side story is really interesting to see. It makes you really curious about other crawlers in general, mm-hmm. and how many other Frank and Maggies are out there. And right. also more anticipation about when are these people going to pop up again?
Yep. Because now they can track them. They have the ability to track any player they want. So Carl's in.
Yeah. Carl. Well, it's a really interesting ride, but we'll see what happens.
I think that's all of our discussion questions. Do we have book recommendations?
I do.
Okay.
Oh, mine is A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Okay. I've mentioned it before. It is also satirical, funny. It's actually very similar in tone. And
I've been told multiple times I would like this book.
Yes, it is very much in the same vein. What happens is very different in the story, but also kind of very similar, like sassy main character. And it is also basically satirizing like capitalism and like exploitation. Because the main character in that book, Earth, is also conquered in that book very similarly by this sort of like capitalistic loophole that kind of ends up annihilating Earth. And then the main character is basically the only human who survives. And he does so on accident and then has to kind of travel the galaxy. And so it's very, very funny, very similar, where he meets a lot of different alien races that have different motivations, some better than others, and a lot of similar types of commentary, and also very funny.
Well, I'm going to take the easy way out and recommend a book series that we love, Red Rising.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you like world building, then you will enjoy that book, because it's very political, very world building, science fantasy. And we just finished the last book in that series last week. So, yeah, I think they're very similar kind of vibes. One is a little more raunchy and a little more tongue-in-cheek. The other is a lot more serious, but it has kind of the same kind of elements about humanity and the human experience.
I'm going to go the opposite direction from you, but similar, and recommend the cozy, less serious one. I'm going to recommend Tress of the Emerald Sea. Also some funny commentary, very like on the nose humor. Also sort of intergalactic space theme, different planet. And a quest kind of story with some, I don't know, like the powders and stuff are sort of like power-ups and things. And
yeah.
Or the dust or whatever they call it in there. So I'm going to recommend Tress of the Emerald Sea and Brandon Sanderson. It's one of his Cosmere novels, which I think we're going to eventually dive in there. But he's kind of the king of science fantasy. So gateway drug.
It is a very good introduction to something that this book also does a lot of. All right. Give us a rating and review. We'd appreciate it. 5 stars, preferably, but follow your heart. And follow us on social media. We're at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. And you can also find other book recommendations and stuff like that online at busygirlspod.com. All right. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.